coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK.
Worth doing badly.
Welcome back once again to Worth Doing Badly with me, Jamie Krieger and David Weber. Today we will be looking at the lessons for the 16th Sunday after Pentecost, and they are Isaiah 55 verses 6 through 9, Psalm 27 verses 1 through 9, Philippians 1 verses 12 through 14, and 19 through 30, and the gospel lesson which we always begin with is Matthew chapter 20 verses 1 through 16. And here's our speaker, David Weber. David, welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be heard yet another week. And the texts keep rolling at us. They don't ever rest, which is odd because this forms the textual center of the day of rest. But getting to that day of rest sure takes a lot of effort and work. So hopefully this kickstarts the preparations for the delivery of the sermon within the Eucharistic service. So Matthew 20 is a very difficult text. The center of the text, I think, is the question that Jesus says to those who were hired in the first hour but got the exact same pay as those hired in the last hour. He asks them when they are grumbling about this arrangement, he says, "Do you begrudge my generosity?" This is a brilliant insight to the difficulty of living by grace. This the fact that when we live by God's gift, the difficulty we have is with resentment, that God gives different things to different people. God treats us as individuals and is not really all that worried about being seen as equitable. And so he tells this particular story about workers hired at various parts, times of the day, and getting paid the exact same, getting equal wages for unequal time spent working. So the question is, what is it that Jesus aimed to teach his disciples about the difficulty of living by grace, living with God's generosity? And when we figure out what he aimed to teach his disciples, then we understand what he aimed to teach us. And Jesus acknowledges from the very beginning that those who will live by grace must deal with resentment as a temptation. A disciple of Jesus is going to have to overcome resentment. Now, why is this directed at the disciples? Jesus is getting them ready to be the first hires in the history of the church. They will be the foundation of the church, and this will come at great personal cost. And in fact, all of us who have followed in this history have benefited from the fact that others have come before us and that they have been called by grace, and we rest on their work and sacrifice. Their calling would be a cross. Jesus understood that, but they would not be allowed to bear this cross unless they did it freely and joyfully and without resentment. Impossible. At least that's what the philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche thought. He thought that for as admirable as Jesus's ethic was, it could not help but lead to resentment. The people who were the first hires would always, always resent those who got the same thing at the end. Jesus thinks otherwise. Jesus actually thinks it is possible to rejoice in the good fortunes of those who benefit from our labors. Why? Because he himself was the author and finisher of our salvation. The weight of salvation fell squarely on his shoulders, and the writer of Hebrews says that Jesus went to the cross out of the motivation of joy. Impossible? Yes, humanly impossible, but nothing is impossible for God. So, how did the parable help the disciples overcome their resentment? First, the parable makes sense only after the disciples have experienced Jesus freely and joyfully taking up his cross. And then only after they have enjoyed the benefits of Jesus's cross. So in other words, we cannot in fact overcome this resentment unless we have experienced the joyful effect of the cross. Now, what joyful effects? Well, we could go on forever talking about this. But the one benefit this parable suggests by the way that it talks about the first hour and the second hour and the third hour and the fifth hour, the benefit of Christ's cross is that it changes the way that we live in time. This is a parable about what time means. And in the parable, the more time you spend working, the greater the resentment. So in other words, we always think we don't have enough time. Well, if you ask these workers whether it would be better to have little time or a lot of time, they envied the people that spent only a little time working. So this would have to be reversed if the disciples were ever to sacrifice joyfully and without resentment. Somehow, they would need to experience time differently so that they would give thanks to God for being the first who are hired. Again, I can hear Nietzsche saying, impossible. It is because they were able to do this because there is a different way of living that isn't living by the time clock. It is actually seeing time as a gift of God's generosity and grace. When time is a gift, it doesn't make any sense to compare wages or work. Peter, again, is our example. He exemplified this, that when Jesus said at the end of his life he would come to a violent death, the first thing he wanted to know was how he compared with John. Would John get equal treatment? But God's ways are not our ways, and God aims to disrupt our lives with his generosity. And eventually, the first followers caught on to the joy of God's generosity and express that joy in being able to bring relief to those who were laboring and are heavy laden. Peter himself would have to recognize by being forgiven for the unforgivable sin of betraying Jesus. At that point, he recognized that it is a good thing there is no limit to God's generosity. Otherwise, he would not be enjoying the benefit of this forgiveness. There's a lot there, Jamie, that I would love to be able to speak more about, because, quite frankly, resentment was one of the difficult things that I had to deal with when in the thick of ministry. Why does so much of this burden rest with me? Why is my ministry lacking in joy? All of this is caught up. All these kinds of questions are caught up in this particular parable. Now, Psalm 27 takes this a bit further. Here, the central passage, I think, is the psalmist saying, "For God hides me in his shelter on the day of evil." So in other words, God allows us to experience the day of evil so that we will experience how he hides us in his shelter. And in that hiding, what we discover is that in this life of prayer, we can be free of the fear of time. We are lifted into a different sense of time when we enter into the Lord's house. So the psalmist says, when I am in God's presence, when I am in the house of the Lord, he says, here's what makes sense. Whom shall I fear? In the Lord's house, he is assured that the day of the Lord is coming. It's not the day of fear or the day of evil that matters. It is the fact that as time moves, the day of the Lord will come and nullify every day of evil that we experience. This is such a gift when we can see time not moving towards the day of evil, but moving towards the greater day of the Lord. The result of it for the psalmist is it now makes sense, rather than expressing fear and resentment, it now makes sense to sing joyful songs and continue to ask, in whom should I be afraid? Isaiah gives us then one of the greatest passages, I think, in all of Scripture, God telling us, your ways are not my ways. I think it's very hard for us to admit that God's ways are not our ways. Our problem actually is in believing that God's ways are better than our ways. Even if we admit that we have a difference with God, we think that we know better than God does the way that we ought to live. So we devise our plans, and then we become angry or sad when our plans don't come to fruition. We see that God's plans don't seem to make sense, and so we distrust them. We want to protect ourselves. I think reading this parable, I would not like to be hired too early in the day. I would like to find a way to manipulate the situation so that God discovers me at the end when there's little work to be done. If something inside of us does not want to be protected from God's generosity, we are not really facing how severe his mercy can be. We have no problem with grace so long as grace leaves us alone, so long as we see grace as a free gift that does nothing to change our lives. We resent grace or generosity when God calls us to be the givers of this grace, to be entering into his gift economy, giving more than others, while we perceive freeloaders receiving the benefits of our work without equal labor. That's what grace means. That's what entering into the gift economy is. That's why resentment, Jesus thought, needed to be overcome in his disciples. Is there any way to imagine that we could be hired in the first hour and at the end of the day join in the rejoicing of those hired at the last hour? Would there any way that we could enjoy God's gift economy in showing that the amount of time spent really doesn't matter when you're living by grace? It's only when we are convinced that God's ways are not our ways, and God's ways are so much infinitely better than anything that we could plan or accomplish. Now, again, I just hear the voice of Nietzsche saying, it sounds good, but impossible. Then we have a character like the Apostle Paul, writing from jail to the Philippians, with this beautiful line, to live is Christ, and to die is gain. Paul understands that once his dying is considered progress, once his dying moves him closer to what he really desires, living is radically changed for the better. Paul would not understand the definition of salvation that seems current today, that it only goes to work after we die. I am saved from hell, or I am saved after I die. Salvation is a fire insurance policy in that case, and it misses all the fun of being in a relationship to Christ while alive. Yes, dying is gain, but living is Christ. And Paul is explaining to the Philippians what it is like to live in Christ. And one of the things that Paul is repeatedly astounded by is the way that Jesus continues to spread the message of the gospel, even though it is being repressed by some of the most powerful people in the world. Paul recognized he would never be able to have a conversation about the gospel with Nero, the emperor, very corrupt and very cruel emperor. But because he's imprisoned where he is, and because his prisoners are who they are, the elite Praetorian Guard is asking Paul to give an account of what he, what got him into jail. The Praetorian Guard is in Nero's inner ring, and Paul begins to see why he is essentially one of the first hired, why much of the suffering is falling on his shoulder, because he expresses in joy, this is the way that God works. This is the way that grace gets into the world. And because Paul has a long experience of living by faith in Jesus, he was utterly convinced that even his dying would be an improvement. Even his dying would be the realization of all that he had desired. His living taught him what was desirable. His dying would fulfill that promise. And for as meaningful as and important as Paul's life was, he recognized that his dying would be infinitely superior. Knowing this, even in prison, Paul had a peace. And that peace even allowed him to accept the suffering that was in his life without resentment. So yes, Nietzsche is right. Impossible if all we can rely on is human strength and understanding. But God's ways are not ways, and with God, there is nothing impossible.
Let God's will be done, David, not ours, but His, and in the way we know it, through Him who said He is the way, the truth, and the life. Your insights on the text also reminded me of how Paul talks about Abraham's faith in Romans 4, especially verse 21, where Abraham was fully convinced that God, who had made the promise, was also able to deliver the promise He made to Abraham, and that was then counted as righteousness to him by grace through faith alone, right?
Well, that's what I like about the parable Jesus says with the sheep and the goats. And he turns to the sheep and he said, you know, you fed me when I was hungry, you visited me, you gave me drink. And they say, when do we do this? So in other words, they're so caught up in the joy of doing this that they don't even recognize that they're doing this particular sacrificial work. It just is what comes naturally. It's a nice moment there. And, you know, I continually pray that this, that I would be able to be less self-conscious of the things that are involved in serving God, and to enjoy them more, to enjoy them like Paul enjoyed them.
And thank you for mentioning yet another reason why this is so worth doing, for the joy that is set before all of us. Once again, David, thank you. That brings us to the end of this episode. And if you, dear listener, have any questions or comments about this episode or any of the previous ones, please do write an email to info@lutheranradio.co.uk. David and I will be back next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.